Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. How are you?
Hello, Eleni. Great to hear your voice.
You as well. We are back for more in our influencer quarter, and we know that you are a reality television super fan. So this one is fun for you and listeners who also love that category. I feel like we haven't had a reality show update in a bit. What are you watching these days?
Well, there's a long list. Bravo is still my number one, and I am always fascinated by Below Deck. I can never get enough Below Deck. Vanderpump Rules, of course. This year, I'm really into Summer House, watching the whole Lindsay Carl breakup. Play out is wild and fascinating. And of course, the Real Housewives of New Jersey is returning for their 14th season. So I'm very excited for that.
Very exciting. I was actually just on a trip and we met some of the people from the cast of Summer House. So everybody was very excited about that. But it sounds like you have a full schedule. I remember a lot of people were into the reality dating shows during the pandemic, and Love is Blind maybe was one of them that was big.
Yes, I, you know, really put my focus on Bravo. So there's a lot of shows I haven't seen on other networks, but there used to be this show. This is like OG show, The Millionaire Matchmaker with Patty Stanger. This was, you know, kind of a very provocative show at its time. So it's a very fun show.
Probably set the blueprint for a lot of the storylines that we love today. Our guest on the show today is Serena Pitt, and she was a contestant on The Bachelor season 25, and she won Bachelor in Paradise season 7.
This is an amazing story. She actually married the person that she met on the show. So this is actually a true love connection. And I adore talking to Serena. She's so insightful, so lovely to talk to, and actually gave us a little bit of dirt of behind the scenes in these shows.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to tune in. That's really cool that she found love on reality TV. We're heading into the summer and wedding season, and such an exciting time for love and everybody celebrating.
Well, on that topic, your sister is getting married very soon. Tell us about your maid of honor duties.
They're actually so much fun for me. She has been a very easy bride to plan for. She doesn't really have like a huge, she was not one of those little girls who grew up like dreaming of a wedding. She just wants to have as many people there dancing and having fun. So we're just kind of having fun picking things out and trying not to take it too seriously and just enjoy the time. So we had a shower recently, which was a lot of wonderful people from both sides of our family, and I'm excited for August.
Well, I love hearing all about it. And of course, I can't wait to see the photos because I'm sure she will have an amazing dress, and I'm sure there'll be tons of giant bows all over that dance floor. So I really want to see what's going to happen here. So I'm going to, you know, keep watching your Instagram for more details.
I love that. Yes, we will absolutely have some bows present, I'm sure. Great. Well, we'll have more updates for the listeners throughout the summer. But for now, let's tune in and hear more from Serena Pitt. Here is episode 256.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industries. Today, we are continuing our influencer quarter theme with Serena Pitt, a lifestyle influencer with over 600,000 followers. You might know her from her Bachelor season 25 and winning Bachelor in Paradise season 7, where she found her husband, Joe Amabile. The podcast fans may also remember Serena as my co-host for January's Listen Again Awards, where we had a great breakfast in Soho. Serena is also the founder of Reset the Label, a fashion-forward and functional travel accessories brand, and a podcast host of Bachelor Happy Hour. I'm excited to dive into the conversation about her career journey from paradise to podcasts on episode 256. Hello, Serena. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Hi. You did so good pronouncing Joe's last name. That is a hard one, and most people don't get it right. So I don't know if you have it typed out phonetically or what, but like, kudos to you.
Well, we do, because I really want to get names right. So Natasha, our producer, goes in and listens to people's YouTubes and stuff to try to get the pronunciation. She puts it phonetically for me everywhere, or brand names. Some brand names are really hard to pronounce or remember how to pronounce them. So I try to be as careful as possible. So thank you for letting me know that I did it right.
That's amazing. I love that. And I appreciate that extra little piece of work you guys do to get it all right. That's
so
amazing.
Full disclosure for everyone, I got to meet Serena in January. We stood together and presented awards to podcast guests from previous quarters. And it was so fun. And everyone loved meeting you, Serena. And you're just like so lovely and warm. and thoughtful in your conversations with people in our industry. So it was really awesome to spend that time with you.
Oh, it was so nice to be there. Truly. I have never been to where we had brunch, and it was just a beautiful venue in itself. But being able to be in the room and connect with so many people that I probably would never have the chance to connect with was really the highlight.
So the events we've been having at La Durée, which is this beautiful cafe in Soho. It's a French pastry shop that they opened locations all around the world now. And it's just such a nice, intimate, pretty room. And the floral was so pretty and the food is so delicious. So yeah. I was very happy to be sharing that time with you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you agreed to be on the show and be part of our influencer quarter, which is so valuable because when we all think about our career journeys, we think about them starting at like age 10, right? Some of us age 5 know what we want to be when we grow up. So when you were 10, I don't think influencer was on the list, my guess is.
It was not. No, I don't even think Instagram was a thing yet, which is crazy because it really is. I think people forget because it's become such a huge part of most people's everyday lives, whether you're an influencer or not. Like, social media touches everyone in a way. So it is crazy to think about it, but it is like a baby industry still. It's so young and new. But yeah, when I was 10, I was not thinking about influencing. I wasn't thinking about reality TV, none of it, no.
So what were you thinking about? What was that dream job?
You know what? I didn't really know. I feel like I grew up, yeah, just very open to possibilities in my career and confident that I would kind of figure it out along the way. But I didn't really have, like, I wasn't like, oh, I want to be an astronaut or this. I feel like anytime I did a career test, like, you know, when you do those like quizzes in school of like what you should be, I was always geared towards like a teacher of some sort. Like, everything always came out like 95% teacher, which I can see in myself. And I did do a lot of teaching in different ways as like first jobs. Like, I taught dance. I was a competitive dancer growing up. I taught swim lessons. So I definitely dabbled in that, but I never saw that for myself as a career, really. Teaching is a hard job. Like, they do not get enough credit. Like, that is a hard job. But yeah, I think as I kind of got older, I was very serious in dance. I got into a fine arts program in Toronto at Ryerson University, and it just wasn't, you know, I couldn't see the longevity of it for myself in that field. But that was kind of the only thing that I was like, this has been such a constant, and it truly was my passion. Like, I was dancing 30 hours a week. It was my love. It was my passion. But I ended up going to school for communications, and I just felt like that was going to be more of a fit for me, despite the fact it was very broad. It felt like there was so many opportunities within communications that I was going to find something that was the fit for me, which is kind of crazy because I did, just not maybe I expected.
Well, let's talk about those high school years when you're, you know, completely dedicated and focused on this one craft of dance. I'm sure that many other students around you were like, this is the food I eat, the water I drink, the air I breathe is dance, and I'm never going to do anything but dance. I'm sure you had some of your peers be like completely devoted and know that they would make a career out of this in some way or another.
Yeah.
Did you remember having peers like that?
Oh yeah, definitely. I would say a large portion of the people that I surrounded myself with at the studio that I grew up dancing at were very high achievers, both academically and in dance, very driven people, very talented. And most of them went on to dance professionally. I would say, like, I can name like 4 or 5 right now that are currently living in New York, dancing professionally, went to school for dance, whether that was Alvin Ailey or Sunny Purchase. But yeah, I was lucky enough to know those people, despite the fact that we went in different career directions. I still think there's so much benefit surrounding yourself by people that share a passion and a drive as you do.
When I was in high school, I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up and really wouldn't have known where to look. But I did have friends. I had one friend where she's like, I want to be a brain surgeon. And guess what? She's a brain surgeon, right? Wow. But that made me feel like a little self-conscious or sort of like unrooted when I'm surrounded by people who are so driven with such specificity at a young age. What that make you feel like being around people where you knew they were just going to focus on dance and never stray?
Yeah, I think getting into the high school years is when you really see that divide of people that know exactly what they want to do and people that don't. And it becomes very evident. Even in like high school, with my friends that weren't dancers, like I had friends that were like, I know I want to go into social work and 100% this is what I want to do. I think I've always been a pretty like go with the flow, easygoing person. I never put too much pressure on myself that I needed to know at such a young age. And I felt pretty confident that yes, a lot of the people that knew what they wanted to do were going to go into that and achieve those goals. And I felt confident that there was probably going to be people that ventured more in those directions and then realized maybe that wasn't for them. And like, that's totally okay too. So yeah, I was really just like, I'm just in high school. I'm just going to do what makes me happy until it doesn't anymore. And then I'll find something else to do. But I've always been kind of like just casual and intuitive in that way.
That makes me think that you had a lot of confidence and self-esteem that early, right? To be able to feel okay not knowing, right? Or not just to jump on the train that everyone else is on. Would you describe yourself as confident as a teen?
Yeah, I was always pretty self-assured. I think that I had a pretty good sense of self from a young age. My parents were obviously amazing, but they would even say, like, you were just kind of always like this. Like, I would say if you met me at 16, I'm not that much different now at 26. I kind of had a good, like, sense of who I was, which I'm very thankful for. I also think as role models in my life, my parents and my family members all had very different paths. Like, people that I worked for or dance instructors. Like, I was very exposed to people with so many different lifestyles and stories and career journeys that it does kind of make you feel like, okay, I have so many successful, happy people in my life that lived so many different lives. Like, it's okay if I don't know what it's going to turn into for me. Because I think a lot of people at high school, even if they know, doesn't always mean that that's the path that they go on.
So when you were in school for communications, did you think you're going to exit school and have like a career in marketing? Or like, you know, where did you think it was going to go?
When I graduated university, I didn't know. Truthfully, I was like, I don't know where I'm going with this. Communications was amazing. I specialized in digital and communication theory. I loved it. But I really was like, oh my gosh, I was so overwhelmed by the amount of career options that I just didn't know what to do. I went and worked for a magazine for a few months, and I ended up going back to school for a post-grad program for sport and event marketing. It was like a one-year program, and I just felt like that was going to help me kind of narrow in my skill set and my focus. And coming out of that, very quickly into that, I was like, I want to do events. I want to do event marketing, something in this field. And leaving that program, that was where my head was at, but I left the program in 2020. Which was COVID. So there was no events. No event agencies were hiring anyone because they weren't doing any events. So I ended up pivoting and going into working at a PR agency, which I was very thrilled about. I was thrilled to have a job that year. And yeah, it was fashion and beauty kind of focused, female owned. So yeah, I was just like, this is great, and we'll see where it takes me.
Well, this is very interesting, actually, because this world of reality TV that you found yourself in is sort of like sport. You know, I would say the casts are almost like the athletes on the field in a sense, right? And there's a game to be played, right, in many ways. And it is an event. So you didn't have a crystal ball then, but I would imagine that there are things that you learned in that one-year program that really benefited you. As you became part of, you know, our pop culture.
Yeah, I would say those skills more so apply to me now in a career post-reality television. On reality television, I was like, I don't know what's going on. but yeah, there's definitely parallels there for sure.
Right. So let's talk about life as an influencer, right? I know you have your own business, and I'm sure you're called upon often by the press for your point of view on different lifestyle topics. But when you're building a career as an influencer, like you said, it's a business in its infancy. There's really not a lot of rules. And if there were them rules, then, you know, algorithms change and you have to rewrite them. So it's like you're forging a new path. So what does that look like in your mind when you're thinking about, like, what am I building here?
In terms of, like, my life as an influencer? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good question. To be honest, I feel like I'm still trying to figure out the answer to that. I've been working now as an influencer for, like, 2.5 years, and I feel like I'm really still trying to figure out long-term what this looks like for me, but I feel like I'm pretty good at setting like yearly goals of like brands that I love to work with, content that I love to put out. And I kind of just let my heart guide me in that way. It's hard sometimes because you also need to look at like what's performing well, and that is a part of the business. That's a reality. If you want to please the people that are following you and do like a service to them of like, this is what you're following me for, and I want to give back to you in that way, but also figuring out content that aligns with me and my personality and what I love. So I kind of feel like I'm still navigating, like, where is this going? What am I building on a long-term basis? But on a year-to-year basis, I would say it's just continue working, creating content that I'm proud of, hopefully working with dream brands. New opportunities are always like the most exciting thing for me on or off social media, and being able to look back at my year and be like, okay, like I took more steps forward. I did new things. I grew in whatever way that means, and hoping that I can look back and be like, okay, I built a good foundation when I started out.
So this sort of like annual like session to build your priorities, is that something you do alone? Do you bring your like publicist and agent into the conversation? Is it a team effort, or is it like a pursuit that you take solo?
I think a little bit of both. My agent's fantastic, and we'll definitely touch base. We touch base very regularly. I would say we're like almost in constant communication. I talk to her all the time. We have a great like professional relationship in terms of like, she's always there to help me achieve any goals that I'm, you know, telling her I want to set. I would say on a yearly touch base, that's kind of more myself. Like I took time at the beginning of this year. I've never been like a big manifester, like journaler, but like I did take some time this year just to write down some things like that I'm looking for, this some intention setting, I guess you could say, for myself and my business. And I think it's good. Like I said, like I've never been someone to put too much pressure on myself. If the year ends and it took a different route and I achieved goals that weren't written down, like that's fine, but it's just kind of nice to assess where I'm at and where I kind of see myself going.
I love creating goals because ambitious people reach their goals, right? So then I get to this point where I get a little uncomfortable, like physically uncomfortable. Well, excited first, like, oh my God, I've reached my goals. Then uncomfortable because it's like, well, now what? Right. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that you've crossed a lot of things off the list pretty quickly, you know, considering how popular you are and how many people want to work with you. So what do you feel when, like, what does it feel like when you do reach your goals? Do you have like a visceral reaction to it? Do you ring a bell? Do you dance? Like, you know, give me some indication of how you celebrate that.
You know what? I don't know if I've ever celebrated, if I'm being honest, which I should. I was talking to my mom about this actually the other day, and I was like, I just feel like I'm someone that's never fully going to be satisfied. Like, it's just so hard for me to ever feel like satisfied in many aspects of life, but specifically my career. I feel like I've always been like that. I'm always like, okay, where are we taking this next? I feel like on a day-to-day, like I'm a list writer. Like, I love writing lists, crossing things off, and then like looking back and seeing like, okay, you did all this today. Good job. This is what you got to do tomorrow. Like, I like the small tasks. The feeling of completing small tasks is like such an endorphin rush, I think, for everyone. But big tasks, long-term goals, career milestones, it's so hard for me to celebrate because I'm always like, but there's more. There's more. I want more. I don't even know what it is yet, maybe. But yeah, I don't know. It's not my strength.
What do you think you might be missing out on by not celebrating these wins?
Probably just like self-acknowledgement, opportunity for like gratitude, celebration, reflection on maybe how far I've come. I think there's so much. I think it's a good thing. I think people should celebrate their wins. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that I don't. But I should do it.
Yeah. I've had a career in marketing, and everything moves so fast, right? So it's very easy to like be like, okay, that's done great. Okay, that's done great. Okay, that's done great. But what I found in my career as an entrepreneur, where like my heart is entangled with the business, right? It's like very hard to separate. It's not just a job when it's your own company. I would get really stuck in the things that didn't go my way. Like really stuck, like down in that hole, right? Like not able to sleep at night, waking up thinking about it, you know, weighing on my mind. So what I found is actually like celebrating the wins, big or small, like reinforced my like energy force. Like it gave me more buoyancy. So on those days where things didn't go my way, I didn't get so stuck in the hole, if that makes any sense. So it's almost like an investment in my future.
Yeah, it's like a way to almost like re-energize yourself to like continue motivating yourself to take steps
and forward. Like a life raft when you need it, right? Because not every day is easy. And, you know, our minds are capable of thinking very dark thoughts, right? When, you know, something doesn't go right. But I just didn't want to be so negative when I knew most of the time things were really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's very relatable. It's very easy to be self-critical constantly, especially in a field like influencing where, you know, everyone is doing their thing right in front of your face and you're putting yourself out there to be compared to others and you compare yourself to others. So yeah, I think it can be very difficult to feel worthy to celebrate yourself. And I think, you know, people in this industry, especially women in many industries, get criticized for celebrating themselves. But I am lucky to kind of surround myself with people that lift me up and help me do that or do it for me when I don't feel like doing it myself.
So let's talk about this. You just talked about sort of compare and despair. This makes me think about like reading the comments section and, you know, kind of, you know, if people send sort of icky or difficult DMs, like how does that weigh on your mental health?
I'm pretty good with it. I've always been like, things really roll off of me. Like, again, it's like just always been like that. Like my parents used to just be like, gosh, like nothing sticks with you. Like people could say something to you and you, like my sister will even like be like, oh, like, did you see this person said this? Like, why aren't you more upset? And I'm just like, whatever, like it's, I don't care. But yes, it will get to you. That's not to say like if people say 100 mean things to me, like it is going to hurt my feelings. It's going to get to me. Like no one wants to read mean comments about themselves. I think the best advice I ever got about the criticism, the hate, the trolls, which comes with influencing, but really is like ingrained in the culture of reality TV, especially like the viewership, was from my husband. He gives this to everyone when they come on our podcast, when they've come off the show and they're, you know, everyone gets the mean comments, no matter like how great you looked or how terrible you looked. He always says, don't believe the good ones and don't believe the bad ones. These people don't know you. Yes, it's nice to read nice comments about yourself. And like, if that's great, if you're getting nice comments, that's great. And be appreciative for those people that are sending you love. But like, if you feed into every good thing people are saying about you and you take that as the truth about yourself, then you will take the bad as the truth about yourself as well. And that is what's going to get to you. And the best thing you can do is just don't look. Like, don't look. Stay away from it. Don't go looking for it. Don't go on Reddit. Don't like go deep into your DMs, like don't engage with these people. Like I truly just try to keep it as like in the smallest box it can possibly stay in.
This is amazing advice. Where do you think, or how do you think he learned this?
Probably from the people in his life, his family. I think he's always kind of had this attitude of like, I don't care. Like this is just who I am. But yeah, I mean, he probably learned it also through going through reality TV and kind of having to, it is something you like have to learn yourself in a way too of how to navigate like coming off the show and having all of these opinions about you from people that don't know you throw your way.
Right. Because there is this sort of like compulsive side that like easily can like take over our, like the most grounded person of let me go see what everybody else wants to read. Right. It's kind of like in those old movies about like the Broadway show opens and then everyone runs to open the newspaper to see the reviews. Right.
Yeah.
It's hard to not want to know what people think about the work you're putting out there. Right. Because that also builds like a sense of community. Right. When people are connected to you, but people are meaner than ever. Right.
Yeah. I think it's so human to want to know what people think about you. I think whether you're like a total people pleaser or you like claim to not care what anyone thinks about you, like humans are so curious. And I think that when you watch yourself on TV or whatever you're putting on social media and you see yourself a certain way, you want to be validated that other people see you that way as well. And that's not always going to be the case. Like it's just not. And that's okay. But it is a risk you take when you put yourself out there.
Right. So let's dive into this a little bit more, right? You have the podcast, you have a product business, and then you have influencing as a career as well. So I'm really curious where, if there is any separation between like your real life, the life that, you know, you share with your friends and family, and the online persona, like how similar or different or like sort of, are there boundaries? I would imagine it's not as cut and dry as one would think.
Yeah, I think it's a delicate balance. I think everyone in the influencer space approaches it a little bit differently. I mean, there's people that I follow where I feel like I'm like in their lives 24/7 and I know their children and like I know what their house looks like and I feel like I'm in their kitchen with them. And I think that's such a skill and it's very brave of people to do that. And there's people that do it very well. I would not say I fall in that category. I would say I'm a little bit more strategic maybe about what I put out there. I would say a lot of my stuff gears more towards like fashion and beauty content rather than like my day-to-day life. And I think my relationship kind of falls in the category of like, if it works and we have a photo and I love it, then great. But like, I don't want to feel like my relationship has become a business. I always want it to be a relationship first. And coming off of reality TV, that was a big conversation that we had of like, where's the line? Like, it should just be wherever you're comfortable with. There's no right or wrong answer. But for us, it was very much, you know, this is our relationship first and our businesses are separate. My Instagram is my business. His Instagram is his. And if it's fun and it works and we want to do a fun reel together, then like, let's do it. But it should never feel like forced because that's, I think, when social media can negatively impact, like as a career can negatively impact your life and your relationships when you're like forcing it into moments that it doesn't need to exist, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine there's a lot of couples who like sort of find each other and then this sort of explosion in popularity on social media happens and that they're not aligned on where that line is, right?
Yeah.
One person could have an appetite for like sharing everything and bearing all and the other person doesn't. That's probably a really difficult situation to be in. I'm sure it happens quite often.
Oh, yeah. I think if you listen, I mean, Joe and I get asked this question a lot, and I'm assuming we get asked it a lot because other people like potentially say yes to this, is like, is it hard to be a couple in the public eye and like have so many people invested in your relationship? Because like, we're not Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. Like, we're not in the public eye in that way. But we did meet on a dating show, so people really saw like a big portion of us falling in love and getting engaged. So like they do know kind of what we went through. So there is investment there. And we honestly have always said no. It really doesn't affect us and we're grateful for that. But we like addressed that early in the relationship. We didn't want it to affect us. Like we don't feel pressure from other people to act a certain way, to put out a certain amount of content, to share a certain amount about our lives. Like if they want us to, that's wonderful. And like that warms our hearts that they want to know about us. But we have never felt pressured to do anything because I think that's, you're putting pressure on yourself if you do that. And really all that matters is what him and I are comfortable with our relationship.
Yeah. What I'm hearing from you is that like there's a lot of thoughtful discussion and decision-making around what feels safe and joyful, mm-hmm. Which I imagine is almost like counter to like when you agreed both to be on these reality TV shows, you're not the producer, right? You're the producer of your own content now, but you weren't the producers then. I mean, I guess it's like, you don't know what you don't know, but did that feel like in retrospect, did that feel like a big risk to you? Sort of like putting your humanness in other people's hands?
Oh yeah, it was really scary. The first time I went on the show, I was very scared about that. I mean, I read the whole contract. It is big. It's very standard. Like it's a standard reality television contract, but it's big. And they have the power to kind of, they have the power, period. Like it's their show. It's not my show, right? Like I'm not editing. I'm not filming. I'm not producing, directing. I'm not doing anything. I'm just there as a cast member. So you don't have control over share your story, how your story is shared. But I was very fortunate. I had a very good experience. I felt like I was represented accurately. So going in the second time was the same. And I think it's like the only thing you can do is be yourself. You can't control what's going to happen after you finish filming. Like you can't control any of that. The only thing you control is your behavior in the moments you're there. And I don't look back and regret how I acted. So even if things had looked a little bit different on screen, it would have been like, well, I wouldn't have done anything different in the moment.
So let's talk about the career of influencing, and then we'll talk about the product career, the brand career. When you're thinking about building this influencing world, what do you want to see from brands, or where's your like energy level at in terms of partnerships? What are you looking for?
Yeah, I think a few things when it comes to partnerships. Obviously, the dream is to be working with brands that you use every day and you love. But I mean, like, it can't always just be those brands, right? And like, those are the aspirational brands for me of like I work with Aveda. I've been working with them for 2.5 years. I use every product they send me and I love it. And that has been like the dream partnership for me. There's also brands that I am new to and that I'll test out and try it, or maybe I'm familiar with the brand, but I've never tried their product. And I love those as well because it just gives me the chance to be exposed to new products and connect with new brands that maybe I wouldn't have independently. And then I also love brands that are maybe like, I think my audience is going to really resonate with. And it's like, oh, I think they're going to love this. And I'm excited to give them like a code to get a discount for it. And like, I bet you they use it and I like it too. And I think that's also a good fit. So those are kind of like my three categories.
And let's wrap up this portion of the show talking about your brand. You're not influencing brand, but your product brand,
yeah.
Reset. What are your goals for this business?
So right now we have had one launch. We launched the entire brand as well as our first big product drop at the end of August of 2023, so last year. And this year we are working on a few exciting things. There actually will be a new drop of new product coming soon. And we're working on a few different drops for the upcoming year. I know there's been a big push for a restock of our cognac fanny pack, which has been like so heartwarming that like it sold out and like people are asking for it. So you know, I would love to restock that in the future, but I really am learning so much about running a small business, having a product line. I mean, like, I do have a lot of people helping me and supporting me that have a lot of knowledge about it, but like, it is new for me. So I think just taking it step by step, I mean, I would love to just continue making these products, new products, expanding bigger, bigger, bigger.
But well, we will see. Be watching.
Thank you.
So this wraps up our interview segment of the show. Thank you, Serena, for your honest and wise answers. Okay, we have a few minutes left for fan questions. There's a lot here. Okay, Les is asking and wondering, how is life in Chicago?
Oh, we're not living in Chicago, but it was great when Joe was living there. I visited a lot and loved it. But we're based in New York now. We've been here for about 2 years.
And Casey's asking, how do you balance your work and life when your content reflects your life?
I try to be pretty good about delegating time. Like if we're on vacation, for example, I'll maybe say to Joe, like, hey, I really want to get a photo tonight. Do you care if we get ready, you know, 15 minutes early and you just take a couple photos of me and that'll be like the time for content. And I'll try to like scout the spot in advance and make it really quick and easy. Even if I'm with friends, I'll try to do this. Like, hey, like, you're ready early, I'm ready early, can you get a quick photo of me? Just making it as convenient for the people around you and as non-disruptive as possible. Or like what I did today is I booked a studio for 3 hours and I went with my freelance assistant who helps me out and we shot a bunch of content. So really trying to divide between like this is Serena time and this is work time, which can be very, very hard in this space. I still struggle with it sometimes.
That's very wise though that you have like you can draw the lines in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're planning for it, right? I think that's what's super helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a really good question. When you're on Bachelor of Paradise, is there a drinking limit?
Yes, there is a drink limit on the show. It's 2 drinks an hour every hour. So it's like 12 o'clock, you have 2 drinks, and then once it hits 1, it goes back down to 0, and you can start again with 2 drinks. I think a shot is 1 drink too. So if you want to do like 2 shots, that would count as your 2 drinks.
So there's somebody who's actually tracking this for each cast member.
Yeah, they take it very seriously. Like there's a book behind the bar and they're like ticking off every time you get a drink.
How interesting.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone like sneak in a 3rd drink. Like they're very meticulous with it.
That I had no idea. That's so interesting.
Yeah. It wasn't always like that. The drink limit got added a few years ago.
Okay, here's a really good question from probably an aspiring influencer. What platform do you favor for influencing? Is it Instagram, TikTok, YouTube?
Yeah, so I favor Instagram. That's where my largest following is for sure. I think it really depends what kind of content you want to put out, where you feel more connected. When I was working in PR, I remember and TikTok was still fairly new, like really new, and a lot of brands wanted to jump on TikTok, but the issue was sales were a lot better on Instagram because of the link feature that you could like go and shop automatically. I feel like TikTok is really great for like brand awareness, so it kind of depends. But yeah, I just think it depends what platform you resonate with more. I feel like you see like Gen Z's really lean towards TikTok, but I'm an Instagram girl.
Do you feel a pressure? Like, I mean, as a marketer, I feel like I do all the time, like have to be everywhere, but there's just like limited time, limited resources. So do you kind of feel like you have to jump on these bandwagons when new platforms or new features are launched? Or do you feel like, you know what, you're just like, you're good where you are and you'll explore it later?
I definitely feel that way. I remember when Threads got released, like I was like, oh my God, do I have to start doing Threads now? Like I don't have time for another app. Like I just don't, like my time is maxed out, and my creativity, like that's another avenue I have to be creative for as well. And like creative burnout was so real. I remember panicking. I remember my friend Abigail was like, I'm not joining Threads. It's not for me. I'm sticking to my Instagram and my TikTok. I'm not on YouTube. I'm not on Threads, and I'm fine with that. And I was kind of like, honestly, yeah, like I was like, I'm inspired to have that mentality as well now.
Oh yeah. The whole Threads flame and fizzle was really fascinating to watch.
It is.
Okay. I think we have time for one more question. What is your advice to someone who's just starting out to make content? Do you need to have a niche right away?
I think you're going to get conflicting answers on that one, depending on the influencer. I think niching down can be great, but I think that you don't want to niche down too much. And some people might disagree with me on that one, but like, I think finding your space is really great. So like, if you're like really into yoga and you want to share yoga videos, I think that's great. But I also think if you're looking to like monetize, like there's only so many opportunities necessarily within the yoga space. So maybe you're then going to like the smoothie that you make every day after yoga. What are you wearing when you do your yoga? Like other ways that you incorporate health and wellness into your day. So I think finding kind of like that pocket of passion is great, and then finding different avenues to share within that can be a really good place to kind of start and then grow.
I totally resonate with that. I think about influencing, like you are putting out a magazine, right? Like if we can remember all opening magazines, mm-hmm. we used to do that.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Right. You're the publisher and you're the editor in chief of your own magazine, right? And you probably would never go through a magazine that's like, it's like you said, all just yoga poses. That's a book, mm-hmm. right? That's a yoga pose manual. But you're probably going to have some pages about yoga poses and then some pages about like the best pants to wear while you're in this pose, or, you know, where to position your hair bun so that you like aren't messing up your hair as you're in yoga, whatever these things are, everything kind of like tied to the lifestyle. And I think that's what's so fun about creators is you're publishing your own magazine essentially.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone use that analogy. I think that's like spot on. That's great.
Well, people forgot that magazines existed, but like people did this work before us. It's just that the medium was different and they had like a lot of resources to put into building a magazine, right? So here now you're an army of one, right? So you have to figure out how to do it by yourself. But eventually you turn into having, like you said, like freelance writers, freelance editors, freelance photographers, and then all of a sudden you are publishing a magazine. It's just a digital one.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's very true.
Well, this has been so much fun, Serena. Thank you for joining us for our 256th episode.
Wow. That's amazing. Congrats to you on so many episodes.
Thank you. And for our listeners, if you like this episode, please rate and review and make sure you're following us on your favorite podcast platform and Instagram to stay up to date on the upcoming episodes and all the fun we have along the way. Thank you, Serena.
Thank you so much. This was
great. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.